Welcome to the podcast series, Planning for Autism in Communities and Schools, with Dr. Tina Fletcher, Professor of Occupational Therapy at Texas Woman's University. Along with many neurotypical and neurodiverse colleagues, Dr. Fletcher has worked with community agencies and schools to tear down barriers and build up supports for autistic community members. And now, Dr. Tina Fletcher.
Hi, today we're going to be talking about autism audits, and they might start in the parking lot and end with the toilets. My goals for you today are, after listening to this, that you'll be able to describe what an autism audit is, and you will generally know how to conduct an autism audit, and you will also understand what should be reported and why. So let's think about this. The first thing you need to do, step one, is make objective measures of environmental friendliness. Now, that's a pretty bold statement, isn't it? It's possible you are wondering how something non-living, like the environment, can be friendly or not. Maybe in a literal sense, that statement doesn't sound quite right, but the reality of it is that the environment you are surrounded by can go a long way to promoting or stifling a good vibe. An autism accessibility audit really helps people prepare themselves for being out in the community, and it helps the community venue know how to optimize all the things they can change or alert people to the things that they can't change. Audits can note sensory, communication, and social factors in any environment. So the aim of the audit is to ensure that the space, which does include toilets, parking lots, elevators, drinking fountains, and break areas, is as accommodating as possible for neurodiverse or autistic visitors. While anybody can assess the autism friendliness of their own venue, it's really helpful to have auditors who have practiced and learned something about the components of autism audits. This can include special educators, occupational therapists, and speech and language pathologists, but even more important are the real experts in the field, and that's people who are neurodiverse or autistic. In fact, having a neurodiverse advisor will provide you with a level of authenticity for programming, documents, activities, and environments that you intend to work in. In other words, get out there and find some people on the autism spectrum to tell you what it's really like and to give you their honest and unvarnished opinions about your goals and how successful you've been in meeting them. Now, in the case of autism audits, wherever possible, it is truly helpful to have a team of neurodiverse and neurotypical auditors working together. Here's some examples. One example might be a special education teacher with a few of their students. Or another auditing team could be members of a family who come along with a neurodiverse visitor. Now, that first one, Team School, will have the benefit of exposure to many types of neurodiversity, but the teacher, under normal circumstances, probably doesn't have the experience of living it. Now, on the other hand, Team Family may only have their personal experiences to rely on, but they have lived it day in and day out. They just know the drill. Now, think about this. When a neurodiverse visitor needs help to participate in the audit process, it's still worth the effort. And another valuable member of an auditing team is someone from a place that is similar to your own, because they have a pretty good idea about how the environment of your place has to operate. So really, there's three kinds of people that could be involved in this experience. Now, there's a couple of ways to keep track of the things you learn from your audit. One simple way is for auditors to note what they discover using some kind of digital survey tool like Google Forms. In our case, we used neutral statements about varying sensory, communication, and social aspects of the environment, and each of these elements are accompanied by a drop-down menu option that has a 5-point agree, disagree. We call it a Likert scale. So here's an example. Here's my statement. The temperature of this place was just about right. Then you can agree or disagree with that neutral statement. You might be wondering how we pick the things we look for in the first place. Well, for several years, we've been keeping track of what we have learned from three sources. First of all, our observations and what people tell us about places. And secondly, we use research evidence. And thirdly, well, we use the internet. And, you know, if you're a savvy consumer of actual facts on the internet and you don't get sidetracked, you could really learn a lot. The goal of this whole auditing process is twofold. Now, this is something that you've got to wrap your mind around. The first one is to figure out what the autism friendliness strengths and weaknesses of any environment are and to inform autistic people about specific aspects of that environment where they might need to use their own strategies to manage things. Here's my first list, so you might want to get ready. To help auditors objectively, that means no bias, no opinion, just what you see and write it down. To help auditors objectively evaluate the environment, several things can help. First of all, you can review feedback from neurodiverse visitors themselves. So if you're involved in a very large art museum, they probably have survey data from prior events. Secondly, you can look at the venue website and social media posts for information on hours, special events, the busiest times, or other resources or events that they suggest to you. The third one is your observations of the place, just going in there and looking around. What's going on? What does it feel like to you? And now, here's something that we really like. It's our totally unbiased smartphone apps. So here's some of our favorites. We use a classroom noise level app, and it can rate overall noise levels, usually in some kind of a visual way, like bouncing balls. A decibel reader app measures the overall and zone sound levels. And interior and exterior thermometer app can measure overall and zone temperatures. And a light meter app can measure overall and zone lighting levels and intensity. Apps are really important because they don't have an opinion and they are consistent. There is a really big difference between saying something was very loud or saying ambient noise was in the 80 decibel range. Whoa. With help, people can draw their own conclusions from this objective reporting. An example can help them get to the point. Knowing that garbage disposals have a noise level around 80 decibels can make a dry or boring number reporting system seem much more relatable. And so people have their own internal standards for comfort and measurement, and what one person describes as loud really may not be the same for others. The importance of that practice and talking through audits can help everyone come together to develop a helpful report. So when auditors finish their walkthroughs with their Google Forms and their smartphones, they can share their thoughts, they can come together, they share their thoughts, and they talk about what they learned from the downloaded digital survey forms. And we find that recording that conversation on a phone recording app can be really helpful. And the word-for-word comments can really juice up a report. So an auditing report can include lots of information, and I'm going to tell you some of them right now. Yes, it can report on the temperature inside and outside or by zones. It can report on the smells inside and outside and the smells of other people. It can report on the noise level from inside and outside the building and, again, if applicable, by zones. Believe it or not, there's differences in the refrigeration sections of grocery stores than there are in the rest of the grocery store in their sound level. The clarity and usefulness of the visuals, signs, and labels. The lighting inside and outside the building and, if applicable, by zones. Here's another one for you. Crowding and how the crowding is managed. And this can go into our next thought, which is parking, which also includes congestion, appropriate signage, painted curbs, speed bumps, traffic buttons, pedestrian walkways, and if it's nighttime, adequate lighting. The layout and the organization of both the building and the exterior spaces, and signage for restrooms and entrances and exits, the availability of people to help if needed, and if the people are easily identifiable as employees. communication options when purchasing items or achieving venue or event goals. Now, here's some interesting thought we learned from some of our autistic counterparts. They really like access to different types of communication, including words and images and computer keyboards and help buttons. They like to type on the computer keyboards when sometimes the dynamic of having to interact with a person is just too much. People with autism report that they really like space to move, especially if they're feeling some stress. They want options for comfortably using personal self-management strategies like stimming. And a lot of people express interest and concern about safety factors, which includes evacuation routes, surveillance, signage, identifiable personnel, store maps, and merchandise security. And for now, here's another one, COVID precautions, like what's the rules on masks, policies, sanitization, and distancing. So a report for neurodiverse or autistic visitors can include a couple of good-to-know factors, high-impact sensory communication and social aspects of the environment, feedback from other neurodiverse or autistic people, and suggestions for how the reader can prepare to attend the venue. So we believe the report for neurodiverse or autistic people can also include statements such as, we recommend visiting this place to other neurodiverse people. Follow this with the option for including planning statements like, we recommend visitors plan for noises in the 80 decibel range, which is the loudness of a garbage disposal. Okay, that's report number one. Now let's shift gears and say a report for a community venue. This is the report that you are going to give the people who run this place. And it can also include sensory, communication, and social aspects that are well managed. In other words, give them some good news. And the factors that are not modifiable that people should be aware of, something like acoustics. And make some possible recommendations. The report for the community venue can conclude with statements like, we think these are some of your environmentally friendly strengths, and these are some areas you may be able to improve. So please contact us with questions or ideas or strategies. So the reports for the autism audits can really look very similar to one another, and that's okay. Creating a basic template that can be changed up is helpful, and it creates consistency. And if there are action items to consider, be realistic and make your suggestions specific, because above all, you need to help each other out. And the more audits you do, the better you will get at the whole process, the more consistently autism-friendly all of your community venues can be, and the more predictable things can be for autistic visitors. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to Dr. Tina Fletcher. Thank you to the Texas Higher Education Coordinating Board who made this podcast series possible. And special thanks for many community partners with and without autism who steadily work to tear down barriers and build up supports for autistic community members. We'll see you next time.